This is a Lip Media podcast.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Book Slut. Welcome to Book Slut, a podcast bringing erotica out of the gutter and into a snobbier gutter. Hi, my name is Abby.
And I'm Sam. It should go without saying that this podcast is not safe for work, so put your headphones in.
I am so excited about this.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm excited because we're going to be talking about pubic hair.
Yay! And pubes!
I just think it's an exciting topic. And unlike last week or last fortnight, there is so much written about pubes.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's going to be more about how to say all of the things that I want to say in a small amount of time.
Yep.
I read this fortnight, Pucked.
Okay, yep.
By Helena Hunting. Mm-hmm. It was written in 2015. I was trying to find... First, I thought maybe we'd have some luck with anthologies of finding some, I don't know, pubic hair anthologies. I feel like it's a thing for some people, having sex with people with pubic hair.
Yeah, or, totally.
And or...
Without,
right? Yeah. Like, I feel like it's definitely a thing. And I was kind of surprised that I couldn't find any straight erotica that dealt with this... Just this, you know, this was a kind of formative part of it. I found this. It's definitely a romance. And it started off pretty positive. I was kind of like, yeah, because it starts off and she's masturbating.
Mm-hmm,
and I was like, this is, woo, yeah,
ding, ding, we're ding.
In. Cool, we got this. And I was just like, yep, strap in. This book made me possibly... angrier than any other book I've read.
Ooh,
including 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, wow. There's some fighting words.
Yeah. And I just... It's a story of a 22-year-old whose stepdad is a scout and stepbrother is a hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
So her stepdad is a hockey scout person. I'm going to be real. It was like 300 and something pages long. So I skimmed a lot of the hockey stuff.
Oh, fair enough. Oh my God.
So I'm not entirely sure about, say, the plot.
I love that you're like, here for logistics, but not for the hockey.
But not for hockey. Her stepbrother has just been traded to another hockey team because he got caught in a compromising position.
God, I'm already bored of the hockey gossip.
He got caught in a compromising position with a woman, right? Who are called puck bunnies.
Wait. Wait, who's called the
women who like follow hockey?
Oh, is that the name? The hockey
people.
Name for groupies?
I don't know if this is an actual name for them. I mean, if
do
somebody
hockey groupies exist?
Surely, it's like a big thing in like Canada and the US.
Yeah,
like hockey's
okay.
Like it's a whole thing. So she goes to his match game thing.
Yep.
And
yep, off to a good start.
Yep. And then she sees this guy get in a fight, as hockey players do, on the
field?
Ice.
Pitch. Ground. Why do they have so many different names?
They're the same thing.
It's just where you're playing. It's like the play area.
The play area. And oh, also, I mean... She is like an accountant and she got a job through her stepdad essentially managing the finances of hockey players, right?
Oh, God. Okay.
So she sees a guy get into a fight and then she's like, oh, that guy's kind of hot.
I love this masculinity.
Pretty much. Yeah. And then she's at the after party and ends up hooking up with this guy, right? The plan is for a one night stand.
Oh, I just got it. Pucked. Oh, I got it. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Cool.
We're on the same page now.
Yeah. Got it. So the plan is for a one night stand. This woman is one of the most unlikable people
okay.
I have ever fictionally met. She is such a fucking intellectual snob. Like, she's just real. And I'm like, bitch, you're 22 and you got a job through your daddy. Like, you need to step down and shut up. Like, she says all of these, and it's mostly through her perspective.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's, so her name is something.
Very forgettable.
Violet. Violet.
You're turning violet, Violet.
Oh, I was thinking Jawbreaker.
Oh.
Well, it's not Fern, it's Violet.
I mean, bitchy name.
Yeah. And his name is Alex Waters. And her brother's name is Buck. Her stepbrother's name is Buck.
Buck.
Yeah. Yeah. Her character, it's supposed to be a comedy, right? This book is marketed as like a rom-com,
sexy
essentially.
Sexy comedy.
Yeah. Good points. There is a lot of sex. So that was kind of positive.
That's good, especially after last yeah, night.
Exactly. There was a lot of sex in this. But she kind of has these things as if like she's reading a book at the hockey game rather than watching it because she's not really that interested in it.
I mean, it objectively sounds like something that you would do.
It does. It does. But then he...
Also, I'm sure people have absolutely called you an intellectual snob at some point.
Yeah, probably. But he, like, makes a comment on the book and she's like, oh my God, it says, I blink as if I've been high-beamed with a flashlight. Alex knows who wrote Tom Jones and he's used the word cerebral in the appropriate way.
Sorry, Tom Jones?
Yeah, like, Fielding wrote it. It's a book.
Oh, I just immediately went to...
Sex bomb.
Yeah, that's exactly where I went.
No. So it's like, and she makes multiple comments about how like hockey players are dumb and how all the girls, all of the puck bunnies are dumb. It's just really obnoxious.
Yeah.
And then there's also this like part of this comedy is that she's like this intelligent woman who has word vomit, but you know how it's just like, bleh, I just say a thing. Oh my God, I have no filter. That kind of vibe. She's definitely the kind of girl who would be like, I'm so random.
Oh God, no.
Her word vomit is essentially mostly just her saying incredibly inappropriate things.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And then being...
Oh, whoops, my tongue.
Exactly. And then being like, oh, no. Like, they're caught making out at this party and her brother, her stepbrother is like, you're making out? And she's like, no, we're mouth fucking.
All right. Okay.
Which is just like...
Unnecessary.
So unnecessary. She is incredibly whorephobic.
Oh no.
So the whole book
up to this point is like, okay, I can deal.
Yeah.
This is a line I do not want to cross.
The whole book is incredibly whorephobic. And it was just really jarring.
Yeah.
So for instance, some of the words they used, she would call people hockey hookers.
Right.
She had a big hang up about hockey players because she dated a hockey player once and it wasn't great. It wasn't horrific. It just wasn't great.
Oh, I just also like people date, things happen, people break up.
Yeah, move
fucking
on.
Deal with it.
Yeah. So her whole thing is like, I'm going to have a one night stand with this guy because you can't date hockey players because they're all scum and they're idiots. Right. But I wrote down some of the things, and this is like a small percentage of stuff that was written in this book.
Yeah.
When she's at the game, she talks about a gaggle of girls whose skirts could double as headbands.
Uh-huh.
I can see why the women behind me are dressed for their shift on the corner.
Ah.
Normally, I'd be put out by his blatant ogling, but I've asked for it with the sheer shirt and the ostentatious bra.
Oh, God. I was wondering if it was going to go so far as like specifically... saying asking for it.
Mm.
Jesus.
This is, and these are all within the first like 50 pages. This is getting later in the book. I moan like a streetwalker. I already had the impression Violet wasn't really a one night stand kind of girl. Not because she said as much. It's what they all say before they get on their knees or their back.
What? What? What?
But because she truly didn't seem the type.
What? What? Fuck me. I always, like, I find it fascinating that when you come across romance and erotica that does center so much sex but is simultaneously really, really hung up on sex work.
Yeah.
Like, you, I just, it frustrates me because it's like, what, who do you think pioneered a lot of sexual empowerment and sort of created the ability for what we now in modern day enjoy as like sexual liberation? Many of them were sex workers. Like, I just feel like you can't have it both ways. You can't simultaneously like...
Yeah, you can't be like, we're going to talk about these sexy times, but then constrain it in this idea of like, but this is in a loving relationship,
so
which
it's
makes
okay.
it... okay. Yeah. And I mean, the kicker that's both whorephobic and classist, I look like an expensive escort, which is not nearly as bad as a hooker.
Oh my God. It's like the worst game of bingo.
Yeah, it's even worse than virginity bingo. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a small percentage of like just the shit that was thrown out casually as a joke.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is gross and you need to rethink what's happening here. Anyway, to the story.
I just really hate that it like positions it as though like the implication of that is this character is like, oh, I'm better than that. I'm better than these
girls who are like following these groupies who follow around the hockey players. I'm better than sex workers, you know?
Yeah. And it starts to like play in the waters of like, not like other girls.
Oh, there was so much. They didn't actually say not like, oh, actually maybe he did say that, but it was very clear that that's what was happening.
I'm just so sick of seeing, yeah, women kind of pitted against each other like this. It's bullshit.
Yeah. And that was this whole thing was just, yeah. They decide to have a one night stand.
Mm-hmm.
Her stepbrother doesn't like it because Alex has a reputation as a ladies man.
Right. Yep.
All around this idea of a hat trick where he slept with three different girls in one night. Right. But she doesn't know that at the moment. That's kind of the complication in this book, is that she finds out about that and she flips her shit.
Oh, that's the challenge they have to overcome.
Yeah, that's the challenge. And then there's another one that is equally as pathetic. Her stepbrother's like, no, he's not good for you, blah, blah, blah. So they don't sleep together. They kind of go to their separate rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets a call. This is just an example of some dialogue that she says. Firstly, when her stepbrother gets mad at her about hooking up with Alex, she's like, don't tell anybody about this, otherwise I'll tell my mum that time that you groped me when you were drunk.
Oh, it's very cruel intentions.
Yeah. Also, he never did that. That's a lie.
Oh.
And she just lets him believe that so that she can bring it up
when he does
stuff that she doesn't like. It's explicitly said in the book that that's what she does.
What the fuck?
Yeah. She like dangles this possible kind of incest topic to get him to do what she wants.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
There's so much.
So
there's so much going on.
She gets a call when she's gone back to her room. And she says, she answers the phone thinking it's her stepbrother and says, what do you want, douche whore?
What?
Haven't you ruined
one?
Haven't you ruined my night enough by interrupting my mouth fucking session with your fuck hot teammate? Now you have to disturb my masturbation session as well.
Who says that to their stepbrother?
No! I was like, this is your stepbrother, dude.
God, okay, all right.
But anyway, then Alex turns up and they have sex. And then he essentially goes Christian Grey on her and starts stalking her.
Okay.
Sends her daily deliveries, turns up to her work. She's not like fully no about it, but she's like, I've been burnt by a hockey player before.
Right, okay. Yep.
And there was this other line in this whole stalking thing that I was like, come on. So he looks through Buck's Facebook profile to find pictures of her.
Buck.
Yeah. He looks through Buck's Facebook profile to find pictures of her and then saves them to his computer.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm disappointed in myself, but I'll probably whack off to the pictures when I'm alone anyway.
I hate myself, but it turns me on. Cry into that wank.
Oh my God.
All right, so there's a lot happening so far. We haven't even mentioned pubes yet.
I know. The pubes are kind of, they're there. They'll come in.
Okay.
But I just feel like the story is separate to the pubes.
Okay, all right.
So let's get to the end of the story. I'll wrap it up.
Okay.
He's trying to land an endorsement. as part of that, his agent tells him to like play it cool with Violet in public. Mm-hmm. And then during an interview, the whole hat trick thing happens and she just essentially ignores him for a week and he explains and she's like, oh, the media just kind of made it up. So, yeah, okay.
Oh, that I makes didn't sense. Think to come and talk to you.
No,
about
there is
it.
No communication in this book.
God.
She's at a game and he says to a reporter that we're just friends about her. And Uh-oh. She like flips her shit and just deletes his number, blocks him on all socials. Like, changes her email address.
Bold.
Moves out of her house and goes to a different house.
Like, I am done. I'm packing my shit up.
Yeah, just, like, cuts him out. And then he declares his undying love for her on the TV.
Oh, God. Do they end up back together?
Yeah. They end up together and then he proposes.
Okay.
I think. I can't remember. If
does he land the hockey deal, though? Is it a deal? Is that
yeah, he does because because it's like once he comes out as like this, you know, good guy because he was harboring this like bad boy image because his right. agent told him to. But then he gets a new agent because of everything with Violet. And then once he's like this homegrown good guy, he gets more endorsements.
Oh, God. Oh, no. There's an issue in and of itself.
So the things I liked about this book.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a couple that I need to mention. There's a lot of talk about masturbation.
Cool.
Which
we love
is great.
That.
But also, like, there's this thing where she's, like, really horny because she's been making out with Alex. And then she's like, I'm forced to use my own fingers to... Oh, she calls it Jill off rather than Jack off.
Oh.
She's like, why can't you just say, like, jerk off, which is a gender neutral, right?
Is it?
Isn't it?
I don't know if it is, but you could just say flick the bean if you want a more like feminized or just like rub one out. That's neutral.
She calls it Jill off. They also always call her vagina a beaver because Alex is Canadian.
Oh, okay. All right. Yep. Okay.
Anyway, I'm forced to use, she forgets her vibrator. There's discussion about vibrators.
The thing I don't like about Jill off, uh-huh. right, is that it's like, it gives all of the, like, oh, I'm a feminist. Like, it sets it up to be like, oh, I'm this really staunch feminist. You're not, because of the way you talk about other women. You
yeah.
piece of shit.
Yeah. That's true. That's, yeah.
It's just like, it's like a feminist red herring.
Yeah. And I think it's similar in the way that she was presented as, like, this very intelligent woman who then still has these, like, word vomit moments where she says stupid stuff.
You know what it makes me think of?
And she's so random.
I'm just really quirky.
This is the third time I've tried to finish this sentence. Sorry. But anyway, forced to use my own damn fingers to Jill off. It takes me 15 minutes to come. The sore wrist and finger cramps eliminated the relaxing elements of the whole process.
I mean,
I liked
fair.
That. That was real. They use condoms and it's mentioned. She talks about how the first time, I mean, this is both good and bad. The first time they have sex, penetrative sex, she comes, which she doesn't normally do from penetrative sex. So it's both, like, good that you can be, like, women don't have to come from penetrative sex, but also this being, like, this man yeah. makes me
this
come.
This magical penis.
Yeah. And he constantly asks for her permission to go further.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, to start kissing her and, like, constantly throughout the book. And there's a line that says, with every kiss and every touch so far, he's asked permission to forward. It makes him infinitely sexier and harder to say no to.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So it was kind of like that. That was quite nice. I also like this line where he's about to knock on her door and she doesn't want her parents to wake up. And she says, I consider a tuck and roll across the floor for fun, but I'm uncoordinated. So I settle for running.
That also sounds like something you'd say.
Oh, also he has a giant penis. Like a giant, giant penis. It is referred to as the monster cock throughout the book. Or MC.
Oh,
for
it's
short.
Got an acronym.
Yeah. And she has a dream about it where it's a superhero in a cape with MC on the cape.
Monster cock. Is that a thing in...
Got a monster cock. Yes. This is my dad wrote a porno.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
But she says, like, so when they have sex sometimes, she says, I'm chanting something incoherent into his neck. With absolute horror, I realize I'm repeating the phrase, I love your cock.
Oh. I mean, that's comedy.
I don't think in the way she wanted it to be. I'm so out of it. I scream, I love you, hastily tacking on monster cock at the end.
That's good. That's gold.
So it gets mentioned a lot. Like every time he takes his pants off.
Like, does it say how big?
It doesn't say how big, but it says she can't get her finger, her forefinger and her thumb around it.
Okay. So excuse me while I just...
Yeah, I did it and I was like, well, I mean, okay. But then if you can't, that makes it significantly kind of bigger. It depends how much you can't. Yeah, like
how
can't.
Much space between your...
There's this whole thing where she's like... it's like a person who wears an extra large shirt trying to fit into an extra small. What the hell do you think happens to the shirt? The seams split and they burst out of it like the Hulk. I can't even imagine the tragedy if my beaver exploded. Oh!
Tragedy.
Oh, also he's uncut.
Oh, okay.
And we haven't had, I know that that's a thing in America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That like it would be something that you would talk about in America, but it's not really something that we talk about much. In Australia.
No.
So it was interesting to me that like there was a line specifically about how he was uncut and she had never slept with an uncut penis.
Huh.
And that, you know, she really enjoyed playing with his foreskin and stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna be real with you. I don't know what to do with a circumcised penis.
I've only ever slept with one guy who's had a circumcised penis and yeah, very similar. Like, I'm just like, I don't...
I was like, I'm going to give you, like, friction burn or something.
It's honestly something that always surprises me about the States when I remember that most Americans are circumcised.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
And I'm like, hey, but why?
I love
like
a foreskin. I'm pro foreskin.
I'm also pro foreskin. I just think it's, yeah, I
think
know.
Also I'm a little bit nervous.
But I guess that's the thing, right? Like, if you are American and you grow up and you have your sexual experiences with circumcised penises, I can definitely see how seeing an uncircumcised penis would be kind of terrifying.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because
I mean, the circumcised
looks-wise,
one's quite, like, nice to look at.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I definitely see how the inverse could also be true that you, like, it's just about yeah, what you're used
what
to.
What do you do with all this extra skin?
How do, what am I supposed to do with this?
It's hiding. Come out.
So yeah, I've never read, even in the erotica, I haven't read specifically about whether a penis is cut or uncut.
Yeah. I can't remember ever really coming across it.
Yeah. So we'll take a break and then we'll start talking about pubic hair. I had a lot to get off my chest.
All right.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pubes.
Pubes.
So the book mentions them a couple of times, actually, which was kind of interesting. The first time is when, well, actually, yeah. The first time that they're talking specifically about genital pubes.
Where else are pubes?
Eyebrows. They're the pubes of the face.
Yeah, but that's not legitimate. That's not that they're...
I know. They're just... pubic hairs in the pubic region. I get it. Anyway, when they're talking about pubes, the first time that they have sex, there's a mention where it says, first things first, Alex manscapes. There's no 70s style dick fro going on down there.
Dick fro.
He's not quite like my beaver. She sports a short mohawk, but he's neat and tightly trimmed. I know some guys do this to make it appear bigger. In this instance, I'm positive I'm not gawking at an optical illusion. It's huge. Just to bring it back to the monster cock.
A mohawk. So a landing strip?
So a landing strip is what I took that as. Yep. Not like an actual little kind of
witch
mohawk.
Respect, if that was the case.
Wouldn't that be great?
A little it's gel.
Like a little spiky.
Yeah. That'd be kind of awesome.
So that's kind of like the first introduction we have to pubic hair in this.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And it made
more detail than you would normally get. I do think it's come up a bit in over the course of the books that we've read. Like, I remember in Fanny Hill, there was like a thicket of curls, and
I feel like they either write about it if it's not there, or if it's there in a, like, they don't really write about it in a, like, it's just a neatly trimmed bikini line.
Yeah.
It's always like full bush or or a landing strip or, you know, something fun or whatever.
Yeah.
If it's, I guess it's something that's like noted rather than someone who just trims.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I mean, I think pubic hair is really complicated.
Yeah.
It's a really complicated area. And I guess one of the things that I really wish that I had known as a young woman is that it's fashion.
Mm.
You know, like it is a fashion trend. And they are trends. You mm-hmm. know, these things happen and they've been happening this entire time.
And just like any other fashion trend, I don't think you can separate it entirely from politics.
No. And pubic hair in particular, because it's so controversial.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Oh, and I mean like anything that's to do with bodies in particular, anything that's got a sexual connotation to it carries with it extra weight, especially when it comes to the female body.
Yeah. And so I had a look into like the history. I don't know if you kind of looked into the history of hair removal in mm-hmm. general. And you often hear about the ancient Egyptians, or at least women often hear about the fact that the ancient Egyptians started waxing with like a sugar syrup thing, and that was the beginning of modern wax. And the Romans plucked all of the hair from their body except for like the head hair, and that was men and women as well. I think also there's a conversation about class in this, because mm-hmm. generally those that can afford this kind of body maintenance
mm-hmm.
are higher class. And it was the same in Egypt, the same in ancient Rome, you know, like it was the higher classes that had these things done to them as well. But then there's a lot of things linked to hair removal and fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had the mini skirt, which meant, and also nylons ran out in World War II. And so women were suddenly showing their legs more. Then you had the Gillette ads in, you know, the early 1900s. Then you had kind of like short sleeves, which is when you had armpit hair becoming a whole thing. Then you had the bikini, which is when you had stuff about pubic hair.
Yeah, it's like it's intrinsically tied to how much skin you're showing. I think even before that, though, like in earlier days in Victorian era, openly not having pubic hair had connotations linked to sex work,
because mm-hmm.
we're talking about like in the days when lice was really prevalent, and
yep.
so they would remove hair for health reasons, but having pubic hair was considered to be a sign of health and class and fertility. And so 1450 is when we saw the merkin become a thing, because
yep.
people would remove their pubic hair, but it was still a symbol of more than just the physicality of the hair to have hair. So they would have the merkins, whereas sex workers, it was a signal that they were like lower class.
Yeah. One of the things that came out in the research that I was looking at was that so much of our research on pubic hair is Western.
Oh, yeah, immensely,
and it's
so.
Very focused on white women in particular. So it's quite interesting to see that, you know, that idea of fertility comes up in other cultures as well. And there was one article that I was reading that was looking into this idea of cross-cultural pubic hair removal practices, and the methodology is a bit kind of flawed in that it was using kind of ethnographic studies that were from hundreds of years, like 100-odd years ago plus up to now.
Yeah.
But
it is a very challenging area to study, though.
And this is the other thing. In those times in particular, and probably still to this day, a lot of the people doing those studies were white and a lot of them were men. And so talking to particularly women of different cultures as a white man, asking them about their pubic hair.
Yeah.
what kind of answers are you going to get from that?
Yeah.
But the study did have a few things about different religions and different cultures and the way that they deal with pubic hair. And one part of it was also the idea of the mythology around pubic hair,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that in a lot of cultures there are stories around particularly women's pubic hair, using them in magic and spells.
Oh,
and,
really? That's cool.
Yeah. These kind of amazing stories around it, which we don't have in the Western world.
Yeah.
It's just not mentioned. It's really kind of like an unmentionable topic.
Oh, I mean, I think that it gets spoken about, but it's always like, well, not always, but it's until recent times, it's always been a kind of like, it's either a statement or it's gross, you know?
Yeah.
Like if we're thinking about like the 70s where it was like full bush, but that was associated with people who were taking a stand. It was associated with feminists and with hippies, essentially.
I read this interesting take on that, actually, that post the 70s was when we had this real uptick in Brazilians,
yeah.
and like full hair removal.
Yeah, it's like it swung the other direction.
And that it was, there's an argument that that was actually in response to the feminist movement. You know, it was this actual kind of distancing from feminism that happened through people's pubic hair, which
yeah,
I thought
right.
is quite interesting. Definitely not saying that people that choose to go hairless or anti-feminists or anything, but interesting to see how you did have that like full bush 70s vibe, and then in the 80s and the 90s was when the Brazilian really kind of took off.
Yeah, look, I just think that it's a really fascinating area that doesn't get as much attention as it deserves, especially like looking around in academia. I was struck by, like, there was a bit out there, but I was struck by there not being as much as I anticipated, because to me, it's hugely representative of ideas around expectations and norms and what is and isn't acceptable about our bodies. And it's so, so wrapped up in gender and sexual politics and how we perceive attraction and cleanliness. Like, it's a really fascinating space, and there just really isn't that much out there. That said, I did read one that was a study that was done on Australian women in 2008. And essentially the study was aiming to explore the motivations behind the practice of body hair removal. So it wasn't just pubic hair, it was on leg hair, armpit hair, and pubic hair, specifically around women. And of the participants that they included, 60% of them removed at least some of their pubic hair, with 48% removing most or all of it. I found it really interesting that the mean age for their first foray into pubic hair removal was 15.7 years old.
Wow.
Which
I think I was pretty late to the... I actually don't remember the first time I shaved my pubic region before I got it. I'm a waxer. Just, if we're outing here.
I mean, but, the entire podcast is essentially.
Yeah. So I found really early on that even with my legs, I can't shave my legs because I have eczema. So I just started waxing, and my mum was really kind of supportive of that. But I didn't want to ask my mum to pay for me to get my bikini line waxed or whatever. So
yeah.
I think I shaved for a little bit, but it was too painful for me.
Honestly, like, do what you want with your pubic hair. Like, it's fine. As long as you're thinking about it, I think this is a bigger issue. Like, I don't think that it's for anyone to say what people should and shouldn't do with their hair.
Mm.
What I think deserves interrogating is why you feel like you if you feel like you should, and why that is. And where that's coming from. I think that's worth interrogating. One thing I will disagree with, though, is shaving. Like, it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah, the
like,
the
if you're going to remove it,
like oh. Yeah.
Give me the sugar wax of, like, the Egyptians yeah. before I get a fucking razor to my pubes.
Give me someone plucking out individual pubes.
Honestly, I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's something that I've struggled with a lot as a feminist is the idea of hair removal and whether I'm doing it for myself, if I ever can do it for myself.
Yeah.
Because I wax my legs. And it's interesting, we've had conversations and this may have changed, but we've had conversations where, for instance, I stopped shaving my pits, and to me, having hairy legs made me feel less feminine than having hairy pits.
Yeah.
Whereas when we were talking about it, having hairy pits made you feel less feminine than having hairy legs.
Yeah. And it has changed a bit. I feel, I don't know, I'm into hairy pits on women. I think it's hot.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's evolved.
Yeah.
I don't know if I necessarily associate it with my femininity.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, I think, when you talk to women, something about hairy pits in particular, to me, I also think it's super hot, because when I see a woman rocking pits, I'm like, she's super confident.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I read a lot into the fact. It is a statement that you've decided to kind of do this. But then I also think a complicated area of this is, and it was mentioned a couple of times in what I was reading about why women, and we will talk about men, but at this point, mostly women, choose to do this. And quite a large number mentioned things about their partners.
Yeah.
Right. And actually, I think this went both ways for men and women.
Mm, interesting.
Whereas women often wanted men to be like trimmed, right? Whereas it was more often that men would be like all off or something, you know, a bit more drastic. That to me, when I was younger, I used to be very like, if a man ever asked me to shave or to wax, I would absolutely dump him, right? Like it's a no brainer to me. But as I've gotten older, the more I'm like, oh yeah, absolutely. If it's like a one night stand and somebody's like, you need to wax, I would be like, are you fucking kidding me? If it was a partner and we had a conversation about it, I think there would have to be a whole conversation around this issue, you know,
because yeah, look, I feel like if you can talk about preferences in all other areas,
exactly,
it doesn't necessarily mean that you force someone to do something they don't want to do, or you impose really drastic rules about what they can and can't do. But I think it's worth a conversation, just like anything else.
Yeah. And this is kind of the part where it's like, if this is a preference, how do we talk about this?
I think I would really struggle if it was something like, I will not have sex with you unless you have no hair.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would also struggle with that. And I think one of these things is like, I don't even think they're called Brazilians anymore, where it's like everything off.
It's like 4X.
Yeah. Whatever it is. I got one of those when I was in my early 20s to be like, I'm going to give this a try, right? Yeah. Like I'm going to, because people tell me it's good. And like, you know, you can't judge something until you try it kind of vibe. I mean,
wax sounds fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was so painful. I just like, I could not, I thought I was prepared. I wasn't prepared. I was not prepared for how painful that was going to be. But the other thing that I was really unprepared for was that I didn't like the way it looked.
Yeah.
I didn't like the way I looked.
Like a plucked chicken.
Yeah. Like I felt really young.
Yeah.
Like
I find that really fascinating in the sense that like there is this connection here that I was thinking about this week. If body hair is like in and of itself an indicator, like it's a physical indicator of your sexual maturity. We get more body hair as we go through puberty, right? And so its removal is sort of inherently linked to this idea of youth. And as we've spoken about before, like femininity is also like often paired with things like innocence, weakness, youthful,
and subordination.
And so I just find it really interesting that like, yes, it does look childlike. And how does that relate to our ideas of what being feminine is?
I also think it's really interesting the way that it's connected with cleanliness.
Yeah.
And this is both pubic hair and your armpit hair, right? Yeah. Like, but only for women.
Oh yeah.
You know, like if somehow not having hair means that your vagina is cleaner.
Which is interesting as well, because the hair is supposed to be there to protect your vulva from bacteria.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Like, it is one of those areas where obviously I think most people can tell that neither of us go fully waxed at this point.
Not anymore. I definitely went through a period of doing it though.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Sorry, go on. What were you going
to
say?
No, I would be interested.
Yeah, no, I...
to hear about your journey.
Yeah, look, I definitely... everything used to come off when I was younger. I definitely fell into the way of thinking around it being sexier, being sleek like a dolphin.
I mean, we're told it's sexier. Like, in that way, it is sexier. I think you can say that, like, society has made it sexier to have no pubes.
For sure.
Like, so...
although I don't necessarily feel that way, but it's now.
Mm.
But I feel like that's only come through considered thought. And also, there is a shift. Like, you're starting to see it more on, like, alternative shows and in alternative brands and things that's coming out. And so, yes, absolutely. It's becoming sexier now in my brain because I've been told that I'm allowed to.
Yeah, yeah. And it isn't, like, that's really interesting to me as well, is that, like, I think that dealing with your pubic hair is a polite and lovely thing to do.
Yeah.
For your partner or whatever partner you're in.
Yeah, I trim my nails, so.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's, but I don't want to be doing anything that I don't expect my partner to be doing as well. And I would never expect my partner to entirely wax everything off. But, like, if my partner was into that, I would be like, okay, cool. Like, sure. It honestly doesn't bug me. But I do think with the increase in oral sex that, like, if you're going down on someone, it's nice to have it taken care of. So one of the things that I read that really surprised me, which I'd never thought of, but like made sense. There was a 2016 study that found that people who have removed their pubic hair were 80% more likely to have an STI.
Huh.
There's also, although there has been another study that's found there's no correlation.
Yeah, right.
So it's still kind of up in the air. But one of the things that I was reading about that was, because I was originally like, come on, like, are you just saying that people who remove their pubic hair are like more sexually active or whatever, felt a little judgy. But one of the things that I was reading was saying that that may actually be due to the fact that when you are ripping out hairs, you are more likely to have little cuts and ingrown hairs, and therefore bacteria, you know, like, it's, there are more places for infections to happen.
Let me just say, don't come at me and tell me that removing pubic hair via shaving is because you care about cleanliness and then have fucking ingrown hairs. I'm so anti-shaving.
I'm getting that.
I have a few things. So when you were saying before about the reasons that women give for it, one of the things that came up in one of these studies that I read was that women will self-identify reasons to do with femininity and attractiveness and cleanliness. That's to be expected. I mean, in the sense that that's
what we tell ourselves.
Yeah. But they found that women were able to recognize that there are these normative pressures on women in general to shave or wax, but they were just unwilling to accept them as the rationale behind their own motivations.
Oh my God. Every time I go to the beauticians, they fucking hate me because I'm like, why am I here? Oh,
I have the same.
Why?
And I always, every time I'm like, oh, can I just get... and I describe what I want. And I'm like, can you make it natural? And then I'm, every single time I make the same joke and I'm like, that's a bit ridiculous. There's nothing natural about this. Oh, they hate me.
You and I are the same. Like, every time I'm getting my legs waxed, there's someone like with their face in my vagina. And I'm just like, oh, so how good's the patriarchy making me do this?
I do love asking them though about like the current trends. It's just one of my favorite wax conversations to have. The other thing that I wanted to bring up was, obviously there's a couple of studies on it, but something that stuck out to me was that there was also a 2017 survey done through Cosmopolitan magazine, Esquire and Ask Men.
Wow, okay.
So they collaborated on this. And like, it's easy to like poo-poo this, but the reality is that sample.
That's the group.
Yeah.
Like, that's, yeah.
And in all the studies that I read, the academic ones, they had like 200, 300, 400 participants. This one had over 4,000 participants.
Wow.
So like, sure, it's not academic. It's not peer reviewed, but like that information was really striking to me. So what they found on the topic of partners asking each other to do things, they found that 40% of men had asked their partner to change what they do with their pubic hair, much less so in women. They found that...
I think that's the thing that gets me as well, is that I just would not ask from a power dynamic standpoint. Like, that's just not something that I would feel comfortable doing.
No.
To a male partner.
But the
idea that they feel comfortable doing that to me is what kind of upsets me in these situations.
30% of the men that responded to this said that pubic hair is a deal breaker to them.
That's okay. Like, I mean, it's not okay, but it's okay for me because I don't want to be with someone who thinks it's a
litmus test, yeah. Right? Like, if you go to bed with someone,
I think the scary thing about pubic hair is that you don't know until you're in bed with them.
Yeah, that's
And it's
true.
An incredibly vulnerable thing to have someone make a comment on your pubic hair when you're naked, that's, which has definitely happened to me. And when you're young, in particular...
Oh, that shit sticks with you.
The fact that someone can do that and not think about how that's actually going to affect the person is remarkable. This, in the book, it does... There is kind of this position of removal of pubic hair as important.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you know, so she has a date with Alex. She says, if I'm going out with him tomorrow, I have to do work. And by work, I mean some beaverscaping.
Stop.
I know. Literally, they literally say beaver about 1,000 times. It's been a month since I visited. You're going to love this. Just hold on. It's been a month since I visited my waxer. I'm currently living up to the furry nickname below the belt. I must return it to its mostly naked status in case Alex should want to pet it or kiss it or bury his wood in it. And I found the use of must there really interesting.
Yeah.
There's also this thing where she's going to his house. I pack an entire suitcase full of clothes and throw essential items such as my home waxing kit and razors into a box. So again, positioned as like the important things to be taking.
I remember being young and I would worry about it. Like I remember feeling that level of pressure though, being like,
or like, and also, I mean, she is 22, so...
Bringing someone home, as an example, and, like, ducking to the bathroom to sort that shit out, you know? Like, I would not be doing that now.
I definitely think, like, as someone who has had to wax, I would never have done something like that because I knew I would fucking pay for it.
Yeah.
But that just meant that I would always make sure. If I had a date with someone... It would be like a 2 day before kind of like.
Yeah, that's some forward planning.
I need to
wax.
They
don't even wash their fucking hair.
Yeah, but that idea of like going out on a date, meaning you needed to sort your shit out, so to say, you know?
Yeah. I've also found it interesting when I've been dating women as well. I've dated a few women who only date other women.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find it interesting to think back to those times, and those pressures still often translated to a woman-to-woman dynamic. Like, it's just, you know, by the very, like, nature of removing a man from the situation, it doesn't change the social pressures that have built up over time that have taught us what is and isn't attractive.
Yeah, and I think it's also an interesting space for gay men. The issue of hair and hair removal is a really interesting space because you obviously have... There is this ideal of the gay male body that tends to be hairless, quite muscular. And then you have kind of like the subcultures, which is the bears and all of that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's if you're going to think of a hairy animal.
Yeah, but there is still this pressure to conform to a certain beauty ideal. And I read this great line in one of the articles that was talking about male hair removal,
mm-hmm.
it said, you know, it should not be seen as somehow liberatory for women that men are now developing the same concerns and engaging in similar projects of hair removal.
Mm.
This may only tighten the socially inscribed limitations to which they must respond.
That's a good point.
That was the other thing about my perspective of being like, well, I will only do it if a man does it. It's like, well, actually,
we should all be free to do what we want with our
like,
hair.
Yeah, like that's not the problem.
Yeah.
Like it's not even so much a problem of like this equality of hair removal. It's about looking at why we do it and being able to have a choice, which yeah. there's, you know, a massive argument that women don't have a choice currently. The other way that hair came up in this book was with the stepbrother, Buck. So he's he's introduced as Buck is a mammoth like a yeti, a huge, perverted, hairy whore of a yeti.
Hairy whore.
Yep. Yep. Then, you know, further on it says, the amount of fur he sports makes him resemble a matted yeti. I don't know if you realize this, but he looks like a yeti. Then later on in the book, she says to him, he says something she objects to. She says, that's like the Yeti calling the Sasquatch hairy. He runs a hand self-consciously over his forearm. So that to me tells me that like he is self-conscious about yeah. the hair on his body. And I was reading things about male hair removal, which is also a super interesting space because it's kind of a space in flux.
Yeah.
We're seeing a lot more men manscaping.
Yeah.
Both their pubic hair, but also their chest and back and whatever.
Yeah.
And from some of the research that I was looking into, it is kind of this interesting conflict between hair is natural and manly.
Mm-hmm.
And then a similar thing to the way women are taught to think about hair, which is that it's disgusting and dirty. And so what they've found currently is that the way that these things are being brought together is this idea of excess hair.
Yep. Yep.
So you can have a bit on your chest and you can have a bit on your back. But if you have too much, that's a problem and you need to deal with it.
Yeah.
And exactly what is too much, nobody knows.
Yeah. I've dated a couple of guys actually who have had... who have been really self-conscious about the amount of hair that they had. And it was a really interesting space because, and I just remember it forced me to grapple with that, yes, it is a gendered issue. I think it is,
yeah.
It has a gendered nature to it, but all that means is that it impacts people in different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
I think what came out of the research was that generally speaking, men do have a bit broader of a choice of what to do with their hair. They can, it's not as much of a statement for them to rock a hairy back.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like, he has a hairy back. It's not like, oh my God, what a, I don't even know what you would call that. But I think that point about the fact that men are more concerned about this now not being liberating for women is a yeah. really important one.
It is, yeah. I think, you know, expanding the cage to invite more people into it is, it might create an illusion that we're becoming more
accepting,
yeah,
but we're becoming more accepting of curtailing people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, I just thought this was fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought I would leave us on a small snippet of the monster cock.
Oh God. Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with hair, but essentially she has a dream about the cock as a superhero saving her from a giant boob.
What?
And
I mean, I'm on team boob.
And at the end, when they're together and they're just kind of happy, Alex wakes up to her taking photos of his penis.
What?
Yeah. 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 There are a lot of comedy Morning. Aspects that are very problematic. This is one of them. Taking photos of his penis. She's put googly eyes on it.
Oh, that's good.
And wrapped a cape around it and drawn a mustache on
it. How did he not wake up?
I don't know. And the cape she made is emblazoned with MC for Monster Cock.
I mean, it's very creative.
She's touching his dick. He starts getting hard. She's tied the cape on too tight.
Oh no, oh no.
And then can't get it undone. And has to cut it off.
Oh, that sounds very stressful, actually.
And he's freaking out.
I mean, fair.
So, Monster Cock is a superhero.
There's your little craft activity for everyone in lockdown.
Yeah. Just create a superhero for your partner's genitals. Consensually, of course.
Yeah, maybe not while they're asleep.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.